Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I've tried to look from an outsider's perspective because it's kind of hard for me, you know, going from somebody that I looked up to my whole life, that was an awesome person in my eyes. This has been kind of difficult. So I try to put myself in another position to look at it. And it seems really odd, but I think it, to me, is more like he's dead. And so if, you know, we can get a statement from somebody, like, it's easy to pin something on a dead man. And I don't know. I will never know his side of the story. And that's the part that sucks the most about it, I guess, that, as far as that goes, that maybe it was easy to close the case without looking too much into it because he's not here. To them, I guess it's justice being served. I don't know. I don't agree with it.
On April 9th, 2021, the Fulton County Sheriff's Office announced that they had solved and closed the 2002 disappearances of 20-year-old Angela Mack and her son, Thomas Mikey Ratu. In our last episode, we explored the dramatic turn of events in Angela and Mikey's mysterious disappearances since we originally aired their story in March. If you haven't listened to that episode or our first update, we encourage you to hit pause and listen to those episodes first, and then come back to this one. Today, we're continuing our dive into this incredible, still-developing story. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is a special episode of The Vanished, episode 288, Case Continued, The Dead Man. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. In this episode, we want to take a detailed look at who Clarence Crewson was. In our first update episode, we shared with you the press release from Fulton County, in the interview with his former wife, Barbara, that led investigators to conclude that Clarence had murdered Angie and Mikey. Why would investigators accuse a dead man of murder? Was Clarence the kind of person who would murder a young mother and her child? Well, we were certainly surprised by what people told us, and what we found when we started asking that question. One relative we spoke to asked us not to reveal her identity, so we will refer to her as Anna. Anna told us that Clarence was a beloved family member.
So Clarence was my uncle. It's kind of a weird thing at this point because, like, we were all really close. We had a pretty tight-knit family for the most part. And so there was times that I would stay for, you know, a weekend or a week or two with my uncle. Like, he loved all of us kids. He was always around all of us. So we ended up moving in, I believe it was 2002. And then he went to prison. Well, after he got out of prison, we all got close again. He kind of reconnected with everybody because he had been away for a while, like 8 years. And I was in my junior, senior year of high school. And he made it a point to spend as much time as he could with our family, since everybody had missed out on so much with him and as far as I knew, he was always like a kind person and he was good to all of us. And so whenever he ended up getting shot, everybody was devastated because that was, you know, our favorite uncle. And it was unbelievable. Like, it was a shock. So then when all of this news came out, it was even more odd, I guess, that a lot of us didn't really want to believe that, because he is not somebody that I could ever imagine hurting a child. And like, it doesn't make sense to me. But I also, you know, some of the things that Barbara had mentioned and stuff make it hard to deny. But then again, I don't understand why Barbara would give a statement like she did if it wasn't true. So my mom called me and kind of told me what was going on. I had no idea about any of the investigation or anything until it was already done. I guess they had sent out the press release to them before they released it, just to kind of give them a heads up. But I mean, I guess that's how I came into this. And then I started looking into it and everything at that point. And I found the Justice for Angie page.
We also spoke to one of Clarence's brothers, Dale, who had a bit of a different take on Clarence.
Don't misunderstand me. My brother was a sorry son of a bitch. He was very forceful. You either did it his way or he would whoop your ass. I mean, that's common knowledge. So I think that Barbara was afraid and did what he wanted her to do. But I believe that she did partake part in it in some way or another. I'm almost positive, just knowing my brother and the kind of person he is, he would not let Angie take that baby. And he was the type of person that if I can't have it, nobody's going to have it. I will not pull no punches. If it's black, it's black. If it's white, it's white. There is no gray area. My brother was a good-looking, smooth-talking asshole. And that's to put it very mildly. Clarence didn't talk about nothing that he was doing at any time. Everything he did was always quiet, because he was always involved with something, and usually it was something that was illegal. He was a silver-tongued devil. He could talk anybody out of anything and make it sound like that he was doing you a favor by you doing this for him, whatever it was. Let me put it to you this way. When Dale called me and told me that they had solved it and Barbara said that Clarence had done it, I was not a bit surprised. I seen Clarence beat a man to a, I'm serious. When I say beat, I mean literally beat the man. And he couldn't even drive himself to the doctor. The man couldn't even drive himself to the hospital. He was beat so bad. I grabbed a hold of Clarence and told him, I said, that's enough. And he turned me and he started to swing on me. I used to be a Hellcat too. Do not misunderstand me. I am not saying I was ever an angel. I'm not saying that at all. I went to prison too. And I got out on parole. My parole officer told me I have an 85% rate of sending people back. And I told her, I said, well, I said, I'm in the 15. I said, I'm not going back.
You may be wondering how Angie came to meet Clarence and Barbara Crewson. We wanted to know the same thing when we first started researching this case late last year, but we were never able to come to a definitive answer. Here's what we know now. In April of 2002, Angie married James Cox. The following month, they were in a terrible accident that killed the driver of the other vehicle and the unborn baby of the passenger. This is the accident in which Angie fractured her right foot, and James told investigators that he was severely injured in the accident as well. He said that he had a broken back, neck, pelvis, knee, and head injuries. James was in the hospital recovering for a while, and then he told investigators that he and Angie went to live with his mother while he continued recovering at home. James explained to investigators that during this time, Mikey had been staying with his father, Tommy Ratu. Angie started to go visit with Mikey on the weekends and then brought him home to live with them. Sometime after that, Angie decided to leave James. According to James, she told him that she was no longer attracted to him with his injuries and left him for his brother, Jeremy Cox. Jeremy came to the house and picked up Angie and Mikey in a green SUV. They headed to Alton, Missouri, where Jeremy was pulled over and arrested for driving a stolen vehicle. Investigator Weaver found that this arrest occurred on September 21st, 2002. Weaver went and spoke to James's brother, Jeremy Cox, about that day. He said that he picked up Angie and then picked up Dale Crewson. They rode out to see Dale's brother, Clarence Crewson. This appears to be the point at which Angie met Clarence. They helped Clarence get some cattle ready to take to the Ash Flat stock sale. Jeremy said when they were taking Dale back home, they were stopped in Alton, and that's when he was arrested for theft by receiving. He said that Dale and Angela were still at the jail when they took him upstairs. He didn't know who came to pick them up. Jeremy's mother bonded him out the next day or so, and he went home and stayed until the end of December, when he was arrested and taken to the Fulton County Jail, where he remained until he was sent to prison. Jeremy Cox said that he never saw Angie again after his September 21, 2002 arrest. If Jeremy's account of these events is true, and we are only able to confirm that he was arrested on September 21, 2002, that leaves us questioning why missing persons databases still indicate that Angela was missing on September 1st. We also know that Angie's mom, Lorna, told police when she reported Angie missing in 2004 that she had last seen Angie in September or October of 2002 and last spoke to her in December, sometime before the 11th. These conflicting dates and information continue to be a point of confusion in this so-called solved case. According to Jeremy's interviews with law enforcement, he revealed that he introduced Angie to Dale Crewson, Clarence's older brother. According to Dale, he moved out of state before they went missing, in the time before Angie left for California. We don't know exactly how Angie and Mikey came to live at the farm that the Crewsons owned and lived on east of Alton, Missouri. But after Jeremy Cox was arrested, police records indicate that she began staying there with Mikey until the time she left for California. Dale told us his memories of that time.
She was a little naive. That's how she wound up with her husband's brother, and I met her through him. Like I said, she was kind of shy and a little naive. She wasn't stupid, don't misunderstand me. She went with me to my brother's house, is how my brother met her. And she had the baby with her. He was young. She always had Mikey, or he was with the baby's dad. Every time I seen her, she either had him or he was with the baby's dad. A little rambunctious little kid. I mean, you know, he's just a kid. He was a typical little kid, you know, hands and everything. I tried to get Angie to go to Illinois with me to get her away from Mammoth Springs and Thayer and Salem, to get her away from all that shit down there. And she told me that she couldn't go. She was staying with my brother. I thought that she was a good gal mixed up with the wrong people. That's why I offered to take her to Illinois to get her away from everybody.
We aren't able to establish when or if their disappearances were originally investigated by the authorities. However, when Weaver began looking into this case in 2020, after police records indicate that he received a tip from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children about Mikey, Dale's name came up as possibly being involved in the disappearances of Angela and Mikey. Dale told us more about the investigation.
I was under investigation for it, and I went down and took a lie detector test and met a profiler and the whole nine yards. It was Fulton County. But the guy that gave me the polygraph was a former FBI profiler. And he told the sheriff, standing there in front of me, he said, Dale does not even have none of the tick marks as far as the profile is concerned for somebody that would do something like this. And he passed the polygraph with flying colors. He said, Dale is not your guy. He said, and everything that Dale tells you is true regarding this. When they first contacted me, I was pretty high on the totem pole for being a suspect in the situation. And after talking to him and everything, he told me that he didn't think I'd done it, but he had to cross all of his T's and dot his I's, and he wanted me to come down and take a polygraph. And I said, sure, I got no problem with it. I had nothing to do with it, so I more than gladly will come down and do it. And after talking to him, I think he's a straight shooter. I mean, I seriously think that what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong with him. I don't think he turns a blind eye to something. As long as my brother was alive, if anybody would have asked her, she knew nothing about it. She would have never said anything. After my brother was dead, she didn't have to worry about it because she told the FBI that Clarence said that if she ever said anything, that she would wind up in the same place. Barbara told whoever gave her the polygraph that. And the reason that I believe that it's totally true is because she was given complete immunity, if she told the truth. I didn't see the questioning from the polygraph. I'm just telling you what I was told, that she gave a confession to what happened, and the FBI totally believed her. He was extremely violent, extremely.
Dale did pass a polygraph examination, and police records seem to indicate that he was not considered a person of interest afterward. But he remains a controversial person in this story because of allegations that one witness made, telling police that Angie had voiced concerns to Clarence about Dale treating her disrespectfully, and that Clarence took care of it. We have no way to know if that actually occurred at all, or if it was simply a miscommunication. There's also an unusual connection between Dale and a baby that Clarence and Barbara adopted after Mikey disappeared. We'll discuss the adoption of that child later on in this episode. Clarence's relative, Anna, told us that other family members knew that Clarence and Barbara planned to adopt Mikey, but that eventually they stopped hearing about him and weren't sure what took place or if they had ended up adopting him.
My mom, for instance, she said that she remembers him and Barbara talking about Mikey and adopting him and stuff like that. And then one day he called and he said that she changed her mind and it fell through and they're not going to adopt the little boy anymore. And then that was it. My uncle had always wanted children, and with all of his wives, like, he had never had any kids. Then my mom, you know, had said that she remembered them talking about adopting Mikey, but it fell through. And I think that Barbara, I don't know if it was Barbara and him or just Barbara, maybe somebody else, but adopted a child later on. For one, to want to murder a child that they wanted to adopt, like, I guess I could see it more the motive for murdering Angie on their part if she didn't want to go through with the adoption kind of thing. But then I don't understand where Mikey would have to go through that. That doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense to me.
Family members' feelings about Clarence vary widely, but no one disputes that he had a long criminal history spanning much of his life. Was this perhaps why investigators seemed so keen to state that he was the killer of Angie and Mikey, who remain missing to this day? Was Clarence indeed a murderer who was never caught prior to his death? If he was, we struggle to find the motive to kill Mikey, and his family does too. We spoke to another relative who asked that we not use her name. We will refer to her as Kate. This is what Kate shared with us.
I try not to let my judgment be clouded in saying that, I mean, he wasn't a good guy. Yeah, he was obviously a con artist, anything to make a quick buck, but like murder, like that's crazy to me to think that he would be capable of that. But then again, you don't know. I just can't picture him murdering somebody, but you know, he thought if it had to do with money or something, then maybe. I just can't imagine somebody wanting to kill a baby. And why would you adopt a child with somebody like later on if you knew that he had killed a child that you potentially were going to adopt? Like, why would you do that? It doesn't make sense to me. Why a little boy? In my mind, all I can think is if I were trying to put myself into that mindset, why wouldn't I just kill her, take the kid, move to Virginia? He was a con artist. He could forge documents if he wanted to, you know, that said, oh, this is Mikey Cruzin or whatever. Like, he could have forged those documents. He could have forged a social security card or whatever. And let's face it, back in early 2000s, nobody would have thought twice. Now, I mean, they would look more closely at certain documents, but in the early 2000s, nobody would have done that. So for me, I just feel like in the mindset of like a con artist, why wouldn't you just forge documents and take him with you to Virginia? He's four. He's not going to know any better.
We took a look back at what publicly available information we could find regarding Clarence's criminal record to gain some insight on whether or not Clarence was simply a con man, as his relative put it, or if he could have been a cold-blooded killer. The earliest criminal record we found occurred on August 31st, 1990, when Clarence was only 19. He was charged with misdemeanor battery in Florida, but the charges were dismissed after Clarence entered a no-contest plea in late 1993. However, Before the case was adjudicated, Clarence was sentenced to a felony in Oregon County, Missouri, for stealing, assault, and passing bad checks. He received 5 years of probation for these convictions. On October 16, 1996, Clarence was arrested in Virginia for possession of a firearm by a felon. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to a maximum of 5 years in prison. In the same offense, Clarence was charged and found guilty of carrying a concealed weapon, which is a misdemeanor, for which a maximum sentence of 12 months incarceration was imposed. We don't know how long Clarence was incarcerated for this conviction. However, on November 24, 1997, Virginia courts charged Clarence with assault and battery. This alleged offense was dismissed and may have occurred while Clarence was in prison. In November of 1999, a Virginia court charged Clarence with assault, but eventually chose not to prosecute, and that case was dismissed too. The next year, in October of 2000, Clarence was charged with threatening bodily harm, a misdemeanor, but this case was again dismissed by the court. On the exact same date 4 years later, October 20th, 2004, Clarence was charged in federal court with felon in possession of firearms and sentenced to 71 months, or almost 6 years in prison. This sentence was to be followed by 3 years of federal probation and was the last offense we found in Clarence's history. In the previous episode, you heard Barbara talk about Clarence's relationship with former Sheriff Tim Ward. Clarence had told her that a woman was investigating what happened to Angie and Mikey, and that Sheriff Ward took care of it. We couldn't find anything in the file to indicate who that woman was that Clarence mentioned was investigating the case. But we've come up with one theory of our own on who that may have been. Back in the March episode, Angie's father Phil told us about a woman contacting him about Angie and Mikey, and that he never heard from her again.
One day in Temecula, I'm not sure how long afterwards it was, but maybe it was a year or so, that an officer from the Temecula PD came to the house and said that he had a message from I can't remember her name, but it was a sergeant in charge of robbery in, I think it was Kansas City, Missouri. And she told me that she was actively investigating Angie's disappearance. It was her case. But she was asking me if I had any information regarding it. And she told me she had no information. And that was as far as that went.
Angie's mom, Lorna, also mentioned in her 2004 statement to police that Tim Ward had told her to keep Clarence out of it and report Angie missing in Oklahoma instead of Oregon County, Missouri, where Lorna believed that Angie had traveled to in order to pick up Mikey. We wanted to explore this connection further. We spoke to a member of the Crewson family who didn't want to go on the record about this out of fear. But they told us that this relationship between Clarence and Ward went back many years, to when they were both young men. Allegedly, there was something that Clarence knew that he was holding over the sheriff. During the investigation into this case, Weaver spoke to former Sheriff Ward, who advised that he knew Clarence Crewson. Clarence had been an informant for the South Central Drug Task Force, and Ward was put in the middle as a contact person with Clarence. Ward stated that Clarence was one heck of a con man, but he said he had no knowledge of Angela and Mikey or what may have happened to them. While Clarence was under investigation for firearms violations in 2004, several witnesses came forward with information. They explained how Clarence obtained weapons illegally, and that Tim Ward had been present when Clarence was out in his yard shooting the guns that he wasn't allowed to possess due to his felon status. They all claimed that Sheriff Ward did nothing about it. One witness even asked Clarence about his illegal activity with the guns. Clarence responded that he had Sheriff Ward in his hands, and that the sheriff knew that he had the rifles. We can't speak for Tim Ward and what his relationship with Clarence was like. We can only form a picture in our minds based on what others have told us, and what we've found in the records we obtained. We don't know if Ward worked to keep Clarence out of trouble, or if he had helped shut down an investigation into Angela and Mikey's disappearances. If it is true that he did, that certainly needs to be investigated further. Or perhaps Clarence may have been bluffing or bragging to those around him as a form of manipulation. Who would go to law enforcement to report Clarence for his indiscretions if they believed he had the sheriff in his pocket? We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. While still on probation under the supervision of the Federal Probation Office in Southern Texas, Clarence was murdered. Was his murder somehow tied into all of this? We requested the records from the Laredo Police Department, but never received them. This is what Clarence's older brother Dale told us about the murder.
Clarence's murder. I've heard two different things. One, I heard it was over a woman. And two, I heard it was over him firing a guy over misuse of a company truck. My mom called me that Clarence had been shot. And I'm like, what happened? And she said, I'm not sure yet. And I talked to the investigating officer a couple months after that, and he told me that it was still a pending case, and he couldn't go into depth on it very much. And the only thing he could say was that the guy was in jail, and he was going to go to prison for killing him and shooting another guy that was there.
Another relative, Anna, told us what she knows about Clarence's death.
I was getting ready to move with him and his wife, Adriana, in Mexico. They were having a baby, and he wanted me to come and help her out since he was on the road a lot and stuff with the trucking company. And then, you know, one day we get the phone call, and it was just like shock for everybody. And they did say they called her his widow. I didn't really like it when they referred to Barbara as his widow, and they haven't been married for a long time. And so I was taken back by that a little bit because he actually has a widow with a baby in Mexico, and she probably has no idea about any of this. She knows he was murdered, but I mean, because my mom went with her everything whenever all of that happened. She's not a U.S. citizen. I know, like, him and his partner had a trucking company based out of Laredo. And from my understanding, he had hired the William Henry to work for him, and William was on parole for murder, I believe, and my uncle gave him a job, and I guess he ended up going on a bender, and he stole one of my uncle's trucks and did thousands of dollars worth of damage to it, and so my uncle fired him, and he was withholding his paycheck because of all of the damages, and so William Henry in retaliation, shot my uncle, and he actually shot his partner too, but his partner survived. And I know, like, my mom, my stepdad went to the court hearing afterwards, and he said, like, on the stand, well, from what my mom told me, I wasn't there, but that, you know, he would do it again because that was his money and he wanted it. And so it was just kind of a random ordeal, I guess.
We asked Anna to share with us how Clarence met Adriana, since there seemed to be some confusion over who he was married to and left widowed at the time of his death.
He was in prison. He was like pen pals with Adriana. You know, she is from Mexico, and they ended up getting married like on a proxy or whatever while he was in prison. And so whenever he got out, they were having a baby together. And I know that he told me they were going to adopt. I think it was her family members had like twins. They were going to try and adopt because they couldn't take care of them. And that was all like in the same time that he was murdered. I don't think they ever finished the adoption with his widow because he was murdered. But I know that she had the baby right before. She was like a newborn baby.
None of this made any sense to us. Clarence clearly had a criminal history that seemed to center around guns and money. He had some charges involving violence, but it seems they were all dismissed and were misdemeanor offenses. Everyone we talked to, whether they adored or despised Clarence, all agreed on this. Clarence wanted children of his own. We don't know why he didn't or couldn't have biological children, or if Adriana's child is Clarence's. But this is one theme that we heard over and over in our interviews with people who knew Clarence. In the last episode, you heard Barbara express to law enforcement that Clarence was abusive to her. And other people we spoke to said they were told that he was abusive to other women he had relationships with. A court record from Clarence's criminal case revealed that between 2002 and 2004, four people were granted orders of protection against Clarence. And we know that two of those people were women that Clarence had dated briefly. We also obtained an audio interview that Dale Weaver conducted with one of Clarence's former wives. We briefly mentioned this wife in our original episode. And this is what Angie's childhood friend Tiffany said to us when we first interviewed her last year, before the case was considered to be solved.
The husband was previously married. Him and his wife at that time had taken guardianship over three children. This is way before. When the parents went to get their children back, they moved. They couldn't serve them. They couldn't find their children. The couple had disappeared. Why wouldn't that man do the same thing and take Mikey and disappear? I pray they kept him. I pray they gave him the best life ever. And that when we find out he's alive, he's going to be well-educated, smart, you know, who knows, following his dream.
We wanted to share some clips of this interview because what this woman has to say supports Barbara's account that Clarence was abusive and gives us a little more history about Clarence attempting to gain custody of children of vulnerable women. We are choosing not to name this person, as she has not spoken publicly about the case or her marriage to Clarence.
My purpose in calling you is to find out any information that you might have on Clarence's character, what you think he's capable of, was capable of. I know he's deceased now. I guess you knew that.
Yeah.
And anything you might be able to tell me.
Not a good person. He's very abusive. I'm sorry, I'm just kind of like taken aback, so. So yeah, I've not spoken to him since I left him. And, you know, I only know what he was like when I knew him. And he's definitely not a good person. And, you know, he was very abusive to me, so.
Do you think he'd be capable of killing someone if he was angry enough or disappointed about something enough?
I mean, that's why I left him, because he was threatening to kill me, and I had to hide, and my mom had to come and get me. I mean, he had me scared enough that I felt like he would have.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, you're kind of, bringing up a lot of emotions.
I totally understand.
I've kind of had hidden for a long time. This is just a part of my life that, thank God, it's over with, and I don't think about him. You know, it's just kind of one of those things that I've just kind of learned to deal with and have kind of let it go.
Did he give you any trouble during the divorce or anything?
Actually, no. I think just because I was back home with my family and he knew that he had no leverage with me when I was away from it. So actually the divorce was fine. Like I said, this was 25 years ago and things were a lot different. I mean, he would call me and threaten, and I tried to do a restraining order, but because it was only phone calls, you know, back then things, like I said, were different, and I couldn't do anything about that. So, you know, I just learned that he was kind of blowing smoke at that point because he knew that where I was, I mean, I have a great family, and that they were supporting me and helping me, and I think he kind of knew that there was nothing he could do. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just your typical abusive relationship. He got me away from my family where there was nothing that they could do to help me. I had went to visit his sister and he wanted me to come home. It was just, like I said, it was a very abusive relationship. I got away from him for a couple of weeks and realized what I needed to do. And that was when it was, you know, I will come and get you. You will leave with me. I don't care if that means, you know, like the comment that really kind of did me in was, you will leave with me. I don't care if you have no hair on your head or any teeth left in your mouth. You will leave or you will be in a hole in the ground.
What we knew months ago was that while living in Missouri, the parents of these children became friends with Clarence and his then wife. We only know the children by their initials, J and C. After about 6 or 7 months, the parents left their children with the Crewsons and moved to Houston. The parents executed a signed statement giving the Crewsons temporary custody of the children until further notice. After the parents arrived in Houston, the mother wrote 2 letters to the Crewsons, and both letters were returned. The parents then contacted the Houston police and were told that the Crewsons had moved to an undisclosed address. According to court documents, the parents joined a traveling carnival in an effort to find their children. Weaver asked Clarence's former wife about these kids.
I ran across something in this investigation, just searching, trying to find out everything I could about him. I found out that unless it was a mistake in what I came up with, that during the time you were married to him, that y'all had temporary custody of a couple of children. Some folks that y'all became acquainted with, that some folks went to Texas, I think, at the left and didn't return. And I think she ended up having 2 more children and got in a court battle over all of that and so forth. Tell me what you can about that.
Let me think. They had stayed with us and they left. We were moving and took them with us. And then I was, seems like a way, I don't know, this is just.
Was that, whose idea was that to get the temporary custody, yours or his? Clarence's?
His. He was very, how do you explain him? He wanted kids, and I think he would do whatever he had to. You know, so.
This part right here is really important to me, and I'll tell you why it is. It shows a pattern with him. It was the same thing with this 4-year-old child.
I was in the process of, and like I said, and you'll have to excuse me. I mean, it's really, I'm having to kind of really dig in my brain because, like I said, I mean, this is...
I know it's been a long time. I know it's been a long time. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've been through therapy. I've been through a lot to kind of get past. You know, I was an 18-year-old and very impressionable, and he was manipulative and a horrible, horrible person. And, I mean, yeah, he wanted kids. He wanted whatever he wanted. He would do whatever he had to do, I mean, by any means, to get it, if that makes any sense.
It does. Where did you guys move to then?
We moved to Texas.
And how long did you have the children?
I don't. It wasn't very long. See, when I left...
Did you still have them when you left him?
No. I don't believe so, no. I wouldn't have just left them with him.
What happened to them?
I believe that I don't know if the parents made contact. I honestly don't know.
She didn't seem to have a clear memory of what transpired with the children they had in their custody, but Weaver kept pushing.
She had two other children after that, and then there was a court case where she had lost custody of those other two because of the way they were dragging around in different places, and I guess what they was abusing the kids and what they were subjecting them to. And so they lost custody of them, and then she appealed that, but there was nothing ever said in that other than in that appeal, it talks about where she had gave up the temporary custody of the two children that you had, you and Clarence, but it didn't ever go back in any of that after those years ever say anything about whatever happened to them.
Yeah, I know that it seems like they ended up back with either the state. I really don't know. That was a very, very, like, I don't think we lived, I honestly couldn't even tell you how long we lived in Texas. Like, it was just like a whirlwind of things happening. We went there. We weren't there very long. And then I left. Like everything, and I mean, it's something I can kind of think on. I just can't recall all that at the moment.
Okay. When you have an opportunity to think about this, because I know I've got a lot on you here in just 10 or 15 minutes, but that could be important. And it's really important that I find out what happened to the children. Anything that you might remember about that and what his reaction was about that.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's a little bit of similarity to all of this.
Yeah. So can I ask the woman that he was married to and the four-year-old, nobody knows where either one of them are?
Yeah, I know where she's at.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But not the boy.
But not the boy. At least, no, not the boy.
Mm-hmm.
Nor the 20-year-old.
He always knew he would haunt me.
I tell you, if you don't mind, just try to digest what we've talked about. Mm-hmm. And in a couple of days, think about this. Try to think about what happened when you guys moved and before you left and what happened to the children.
Okay.
And call me back and let me know what you come up with, okay?
We don't know if Clarence's ex-wife ever called Weaver back with more information because we don't have any further audio recordings of interviews with her. However, in the police files that we did receive, there's an email that Weaver sent to the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, trying to obtain more information about what happened to those children. This is what his email said. Clarence's ex-wife said that she and Clarence moved to Texas with the children, and while she was at work one day, something happened to the boy, and Clarence took him to the emergency room for treatment, and the medical personnel determined that the injury was not an accident, and obviously some type of abuse, and the children were taken by Child Protective Services. The biological parents were contacted, and Child Protective Services found they were unfit to have custody of the children. What I'm seeking is to find out as much information as I can about Clarence and the reason the child was hospitalized. Clarence is a suspect in the homicide of Angela Mack Cox, and at that time, her 4-year-old son, Thomas Michael Ratu. Clarence and his wife Barbara had temporary custody of Michael, aka Mikey, and were in the process of adopting him when Angela decided she no longer wanted to go through with it, and they have not been seen since. It would seem there was a pattern in Clarence's behavior in attempting to gain custody of a child or children belonging to someone else. Any assistance you may be able to provide would be appreciated. We can't tell you for certain what happened to these children. We don't even know if Weaver got a response to the email he sent, as that was not in the records we received. Since the case involved children, their identities are protected and they were only identified by their initials. But what we can see is an emerging pattern involving Clarence and the taking of other people's children. We've heard multiple relatives tell us that Clarence desperately wanted to have a child and offered to help struggling parents by taking care of their kids, sometimes as part of a temporary arrangement, and other times trying to permanently adopt them. We know that Angie was at a difficult point in her life, especially at only 20 years old with no stable housing, 2 small children, a husband she had just left, and very likely in the throes of an addiction to drugs. That was just the kind of person that Clarence Crewson was looking for. If you were thinking that this was a strange occurrence, but perhaps wondering if Clarence was genuinely trying to help people out of his own desire for children, we were too. But then Dale Crewson told us something about a time when Clarence offered his ex-wife money for a child, and we started to question if this was a problematic habit that Clarence had.
My ex-wife told me one time, after we had gotten a divorce, that Clarence told her that he would see to it that she would get full custody of that baby, and I would not even have visitation of it if she would sign custody of the baby over to him and he would give her $15,000.
And there was yet another baby connected to Dale that the Crewsons wanted to adopt more than a year after Angie and Mikey disappeared. This was not Dale's child. He had started dating a woman who was already pregnant when he met her. Dale told us more.
I was seeing the girl, and we broke up, and I was told that they adopted her. I seen her, several years later, and she told me they didn't, so I don't know. Clarence said that he adopted the baby. We put me on the birth certificate. We were going to get married, and then she got into trouble, and I was going to take care of the baby because she was going to go to jail, and I told her, I said, I will take care of the baby, and I'll be here when you get out. And she said, no, she said, I've got the baby taken care of. Somebody else is going to take care of the baby.
This is what we know about the baby. She was born in early 2004, and Clarence was running a bad check writing scheme around this time. Clarence and the others involved in the scheme opened several bank accounts in Southeast and South Central Missouri and wrote insufficiently funded checks off of these accounts. They used the checks to pay for cattle, which they quickly turned around and sold for cash. Throughout the scam, Clarence persuaded the baby's mother to write the majority of, or possibly all of, the bad checks. Law enforcement authorities eventually caught up to her and arrested her. A source told investigators that Clarence Crewson leveraged money that he believed the mother owed him, stemming from the purchase of an expensive dog and other unknown items, and that he had also threatened to tell law enforcement about other bad checks this woman had written, unless she gave him custody of her baby. After gaining custody of the infant, beginning the adoption process and changing the child's name, Clarence and Barbara left Missouri and moved to Virginia. It was on a return trip to Missouri that Clarence Crewson was arrested for firearms violations and spent the next several years in federal prison. According to Barbara, she divorced Clarence and he agreed to give her custody of the child. Court documents indicate that Barbara and Clarence divorced in 2006. Barbara later changed her name, as well as the child's, to Barbara's maiden name, presumably so they were no longer Crewsons. We can't say that we blame her. Everything about this is uniquely weird, but even though the adoption of this child started out formally via an attorney in family court, it appears at best to be sketchy, and at worst, possibly illegal. Weaver even spoke to the attorney who recalled doing adoption paperwork for the Crewsons, but could not recall specifically what work had been completed. Additionally, the records state that two inmates who had been incarcerated with Clarence came forward with information independently of each other and without standing to gain anything for themselves. They each said that Clarence had been talking about how he was shopping around for a fake birth certificate so that he could get a baby a social security number. He was offering to trade a pickup truck for the document. Why would Clarence need to do this if the adoption was legal and had been filed formally in court? One witness who knew the baby's biological mother as well as the Crewsons told law enforcement that from what she understood, the arrangement was only supposed to be temporary, at least as far as the mother believed, and that the Crewsons were going to care for the child while the mother resolved her legal problems. But this plan seemed to change when Barbara started talking about moving away to Virginia with the baby. The witness found it odd that the mother would give up her baby, since she appeared to be excited about having the child, and never mentioned wanting to give the baby up for adoption. Authorities spoke to the biological mother in 2005. They asked if Clarence Crewson threatened to expose additional bad checks she may have written if she didn't agree to turn over custody of her baby to him. According to the report, she became silent and looked away. When asked the question again, she placed her head in her hands and began to cry. She ultimately refused to answer the question, stood up and stated that she would speak to the investigator again with her lawyer present. A correctional officer who had escorted the mother to the interview room said that she seemed to be agitated at the thought of speaking with an FBI agent. While en route to the interview room, she turned to the officer and stated that she would not rat anybody out because she didn't want to put her child in danger. In another interview, the mother stated that she thought the adoption paperwork was legal. However, she said that there were no attorneys involved and that she testified before a notary. Did Clarence and Barbara Crewson retain an attorney for the adoption without the mother's knowledge? Did she forget or not want to share this information with law enforcement? Or was the attorney that Weaver interviewed about the adoption confused about which child's adoption the Crewsons hired him for? The mother stated that she was not forced to give custody of her child to the Crewsons. She said that she was under the impression that she turned over custody to the Crewsons temporarily. She stated that once she reestablished herself, the Crewsons would return custody of her child to her. Whether it is true that the mother of the child thought this was a temporary agreement or not, the child was never returned to her and remains in Barbara's custody today. This child is still a minor. When the FBI was looking into this in 2005, in an inquiry unrelated to the disappearances of Angie and Mikey, they learned that the adoption had not been finalized at that time. We don't know what came of that because adoption records are sealed. However, from the information that we did learn, several aspects of this story were concerning to us regarding how the Crewsons came to adopt her. Angie's friend Tiffany told us how she felt when she learned about this.
The baby girl one is really alarming to me, especially after reading that the mother was interviewed and expressed what it looked like was regret for not having her daughter and was scared for her daughter's life. So that, for them to close that, I was like, oh my goodness, they had them right here. And there was even claims, which it looks like Mikey's been was referenced, you know, talking about Clarence possibly, you know, giving Angela money for Mikey years before. They don't mention her name, but we had heard that, you know, maybe that was something that he had offered her money. So we know that's who they're talking about. I feel like they overlooked that huge, you know, this is they closed that and let her raise this little girl who potentially mom got bullied and gave up her kid. That's traded it for a dog. That's how kind of how it looked like in that paperwork, right? It looked like basically she owed them money and they basically said, you're going to give me your kid and you're not going to owe me the money and get in trouble. And I cannot believe that. No one's exposed this stuff yet on Barbara. Is this true? Because, wow.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
I mentioned earlier that there was some controversy surrounding Clarence's brother, Dale, and the adoption of this child. You heard Dale mention that they put his name on the birth certificate, and he was not the biological father of this child, which is considered paternity fraud. When the FBI began looking into this, the mother of the child admitted that Dale wasn't the biological father, and that she was 5 months pregnant when she met him. She also admitted to falsely stating on adoption documents that Dale Crewson was the father of her child. This lends credence to what's in the police records, that she did have some knowledge of the adoption of her child. She said she falsified the identity of the child's father for personal reasons. Primarily, she said that Dale Crewson was there for her. In the file, it states that Barbara and Clarence asked Dale to claim that he was the father and say that he wished to give up his parental rights. Dale agreed and submitted the affidavit. While it appears that Dale was just trying to help in this situation, his connection to this adoption made authorities scrutinize his potential involvement more than perhaps others. During the FBI investigation, they spoke to a woman that Clarence had dated between 2003 and 2004. She told law enforcement that she was unaware of Clarence having custody of a child during the period of time that they dated. She said that Clarence indicated to her that he was unable to have a child and was interested in adopting her one-year-old son after he divorced Barbara. He also told her that years prior to meeting her, he had offered another woman $25,000 for her child. Clarence claimed that he got the child for a short period of time before the mother reneged on the deal. Was Clarence talking about Mikey? We have to wonder about Clarence's obsession with adopting children. Was this innocent and he simply wanted to be a father, but wasn't able to have children of his own? Or did he want access to these kids for something more nefarious? We know the FBI was investigating him in 2005 over the baby who was adopted after Mikey disappeared. It's a shame that the FBI didn't connect Clarence to the missing boy he had tried to adopt a few years earlier. We have to wonder if the FBI was even aware of Mikey's disappearance at the time, and how such a straightforward connection could have been overlooked. Hindsight is 20/20, but if the FBI had looked into Angie and Mikey's case then, we might just know more today about what happened to Angie and Mikey. These examples we shared with you are just the ones that we know about. There could be more children. Could Clarence have been involved with child trafficking in some way? There's one more disturbing allegation that we heard regarding Clarence and children that we want to address, which possibly speaks to Clarence's troubling behavioral patterns regarding children. Cruzan relative Kate told us the following.
He was sleeping with a teenage girl, and he was absolutely married to Barbara. He was absolutely married to her at the time. When she was like 16 or 17, Clarence was sleeping with her. And he was like a 30-something, like a 30-year-old man. Clarence was like the cool uncle that would let them get drunk over at his house.
Though disturbing, this is a statement of one relative only. And we won't ever know what Clarence's intentions were, though we thought it was too important to gloss over. Most people we spoke to seemed to find it believable that Clarence could have killed Angie, because he was angry with her over her backing out of the adoption and wanted to keep Mikey. But why would he have killed the child that he loved? Is it possible that he didn't? This has fueled the idea that Mikey could be alive. In fact, this is a rumor that has been going around for years, that Mikey is still alive. Barbara said that the adoption agreement that they all allegedly signed gave Angie 1 year to back out of the deal. If Angie had just disappeared and never resurfaced, that would have allowed Clarence to keep Mikey. Is it possible that that's what happened? We told you in the March episode that there was talk of a photo of Mikey after he was reported missing by his father, Tommy, in September of 2002. We learned from the file that it was one of Clarence's other brothers, Tony, who claimed to have this photo. We reached out to Tony Cruzan, hoping he would take the opportunity to share his side of the story with us. However, he indicated that he was strongly opposed to speaking about all of this. In the police file, it's clear that the finger had been pointed at Tony at some point, just as others had pointed the finger at Dale. But Weaver found Tony to be helpful and seemed to be telling the truth about what he knew. He told investigators that he remembered Mikey, because he had a son close to Mikey in age and they played together. Tony asked Clarence where they got Mikey, and he reportedly told Tony that he had gotten Mikey from a young girl that was on drugs, and she was going away to rehab. He said that they were in the process of adopting the boy. Tony remembered that a couple of months later, he was at the Cruzan home and asked Clarence where the boy was, and Clarence told him that the girl came and got him. Tony said Clarence told him that he had to be careful not to talk about it in front of Barbara, because it upset her. Tony said he would try to find the picture he had of Mikey. Several weeks later, Tony sent Weaver 3 photographs of Mikey playing with his son. The pictures were dated 10/19/2002. So that tells us that Mikey was alive in October, 6 weeks after he was reported missing to authorities. Our timeline suggests that this photo would have been taken while Angie was still thought to be in California. In our first episode on this case, Angie's friend Brandy explained to us that she had called the sheriff's office years ago. She wanted to inquire about the case, and she was told something that made her think that Mikey was alive. Here's a short clip of what Brandy said in her original interview.
So I called the chief at the time, Albert Roark, and was telling him the story that I had heard. They wouldn't do nothing about it. The sheriff told me that they think they might have found Mikey, but because of the living situation that he would be in down here, which would be drugs, and his dad was in and out of prison and all that, that basically not in these words, but, you know, more or less, he told me that I just need to butt out or I could end up like her.
Brandy told us a little more about this when we spoke to her again for this update.
Because Albert Roark had told me when I first found out that Mikey was in a place that on the East Coast, which would be Virginia, and he was doing it fine, and they didn't want to bring him back to the life he would have here. And that was in 2014 or 15. But he wouldn't tell me exactly where he was. He said he didn't want to interrupt his life because he seemed to be doing good. I think that after Angie was murdered, I think that they took Mikey and moved to Virginia and to get him to forget everything in Arkansas. I honestly think that the lady, Miss Barbara, is hiding him out. Honestly, I don't feel he's left us yet. You know, I was with the baby for a year, at least a year, and before that, and we have a bond, and I just don't feel, and my body don't feel that he's gone. I think he's still alive and out there somewhere. I don't think he knows that he's Mikey Ratu. I think he thinks he's somebody else. I don't think that he knows he's from Arkansas or has family that cares about him, or I just don't think he knows. I think all of his memory would be too young to remember any of that. He might vaguely remember bits and pieces.
There are so many odd pieces to this story, and they seem to only become more puzzling as the story continues to develop. Why would authorities tell Brandy years ago that they thought they found Mikey on the East Coast, but they didn't want to disrupt his life? Then, in 2021, state that he's been dead since the end of 2002. Was this a mistake, or could there be more to it? We learned that a member of the Ratu family, who didn't want to speak on the record, claims that in 2006, they were asked to come to the sheriff's office to identify some photos of Mikey. The person did identify one photo they believed to be Mikey. This person alleges that in this 2006 meeting, Sheriff Rourke, along with some other officers, informed them that Mikey was well-adjusted, and they felt it was best to leave him in his current living situation. They said he was living in Pennsylvania. If this is true, it's absolutely shocking. What is striking about this is that it's very similar to what Brandy told us, and there's no indication that Brandy and this relative of Mikey's would have discussed this possibility, or that they even know each other. It's very hard to convince people that Mikey has been dead this whole time, when they were already led to believe that he was alive and well, living in another state. It makes you wonder if something is being covered up. Is this why there was such a rush to close the case? Now, we certainly don't want to give anyone false hope that Mikey is alive, if it is in fact true that Clarence killed him. However, these questions and concerns that the families and even the entire community have are valid, and they deserve to be answered with more than a dismissive press release that seems to discourage anyone from asking more questions. If anything, the surprise resolution of Angie and Mikey's disappearances did the opposite of what was intended. Instead of answering questions and providing closure to their families and the community, only more questions arose. Clarence's niece Anna told us that she remains conflicted about the outcome investigators have reached.
I've tried to stay, like, look from an outsider's perspective, because it's kind of hard for me, you know, going from somebody that I looked up to my whole life, you know, that was an awesome person in my eyes. This has been kind of difficult, so I try to put myself in another position to look at it. And it seems really odd, but I think it, to me, is more like he's dead. And so if, you know, we can get a statement from somebody, like, it's easy to pin something on a dead man. And I don't know. I will never know his side of the story. And that's the part that sucks the most about it, I guess. Maybe it was easy to close the case without looking too much into it, because he's not here. To them, I guess it's justice being served. I don't know. I don't agree with it. The whole thing has been really weird in general. Like, the fact that somebody can give a statement the way that Barbara did and then walk free as if nothing ever happened, that does not seem okay. I know there's, like, people cut deals they can plea out to things and stuff like that. But to me, that it seems really weird that she literally just got absolutely nothing whatsoever. Like, she's just good to go. That is the easiest way to close the case. But then I do know that there obviously is some truth to it. And I don't feel like Barbara was completely honest. I don't know what direction to look at. I don't want to feel sad for this man being dead anymore, because rightfully, if it was anybody else at all, I would be like, yeah, they got what they deserved if they did that to this woman and her child, you know, absolutely. So I feel like I can't change my point of view just because it's somebody that I thought so highly of at one point in time.
Clarence Crewson isn't here to tell his side of this story. And it feels like once you examine the details of this case further, the fragile house of cards that investigators built to close this case collapses. One major component of the flimsy case against Clarence is that they believe he burned Angie and Mikey in his home furnace, based on things that Barbara remembered Clarence saying. On its face, this sounds like such an awful ending for a young mother and her son. And since Weaver seems to believe that this would have completely destroyed their remains, there's no reason to keep looking for them. The more we thought about this and questioned if it was even possible to dispose of bodies in this manner, we just couldn't let it go. However, we aren't experts, so any of our personal thoughts would be purely speculation. We wanted to speak to an expert about this, so we found one. In the next segment, we'll be examining the theory that Angie and Mikey were disposed of in Clarence's home furnace.
It's just kind of a horrible situation in a lot of different ways. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever really find out the truth, but I hope that we can.
Clarence, obviously, he wasn't a good guy. Like, he had been in prison, and he had done these things, and he was meddling around doing whatever between Mexico and Texas. I don't know for sure. I mean, there had been family rumors or whatever that maybe he was, like, you know, doing, like, you know, some drug trafficking or whatever. I just don't understand it. Like, first of all, I don't understand how she wouldn't have woken up and said, hey, you know, I'm not so sure. She could have not heard, like, a murder even happen. Or him humping two bodies down to the furnace or whatever, or wherever it is. My next thought is that I don't understand why. I mean, there's no way that she could have possibly, I mean, she knew that he was sleeping with other people. He had teenagers over drinking and whatever. Why wouldn't she have gone to the police right then, especially if she loved that little boy as much as she says she did? If she loved Mikey as much as what she claimed she did, she wanted to have him for her own, then why would she not be like, oh my God, you just killed this baby that I loved and wanted to keep forever. Like, why would you do that? What? No.
That brings us to the end of episode 288. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll have 2 more episodes to share with you. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.